Hey, welcome to Coin Talk. I'm Aaron Lammer. With me today, Jay Kang. A lot of stuff to talk about. A little sad sumo coin news. We also talked about ICOs that seem more like prepaid gift cards and much, much more. We are brought to you in partnership with Medium. They've got lots of great writing about crypto at me.dm/crypto. You can, of course, find all of our episodes at medium.com/cointalk. That includes transcripts. So maybe you'd like to read our interview with a very nice and reasonable Ripple fan, or perhaps catch up on the Fake Internet Money book club. We've done two episodes on Safedin Amous's The Bitcoin Standard. And hey, you should finish that book because we're going to have a final finale episode with Safedin himself coming up soon. All right, here's the show.
This episode of Coin Talk was taped Tuesday, June 5th at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $7,592.
Jay, in the crypto cave.
We are in the crypto cave.
I feel like it was different. We taped that Lifehacker show, and it was like a whole different vibe in the sunlight.
Yeah, I know. You were like on one. You had like a checklist in your head of things you had to shill. From like sumo coin to the term coin world.
Yes. Actually, I have some sumo coin related news. Some sad sumo coin related news.
Okay. What I really hope every time, you know, like when you look at things on Twitter and you see that someone is trending and you assume that they are dead.
Yeah.
Okay. Now it might seem a little bit grim to say, but every time you bring up sumo coin and say I have sumo coin news, or when you text me and say we should talk about sumo coin, my hope is that it's dead so that we never have to talk about it.
Well, I'll say a few things. One, sumo coin is not nearly popular enough to get onto Twitter trending if it dies. Even people we know who work professionally in coin world have gotten a straight blank when I've mentioned sumo coin. Like people who've dedicated their lives to cryptocurrencies don't even know what sumo coin is.
Okay.
So should we just get it out of the way and bury sumo coin?
Yeah. Is it dead?
I wouldn't say it's like torn to a million pieces, but it is not presently trading.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's bad.
They took it off the exchange.
I don't really understand it. I'm going to put a huge disclaimer out there. None of this is investment advice. If you already bought sumo, you've already disobeyed that warning. And
I do like how this is not investment advice has been creeping up earlier and earlier in our podcast.
Well, someone emailed me and Max, my co-host on Longform Podcast, saying that he had lost a bunch of money based on my crypto calls, and could he get a free Longform Podcast T-shirt? So I'm sorry.
The only investment advice we've ever given is to fade our picks, to like do the opposite of what we do.
Well, there's no short market for sumo coins.
That's true.
So,
that is true.
I guess to short sumo coin, you would just like delete your Cryptopia account and like stay as far away from micro cap coin. So I want to give people a little history of my involvement in sumo coin. Me and you both got into crypto around the same time, maybe me a little bit before you. We started off buying on Coinbase. We eventually migrated to Bittrex. And some part of my curiosity just made me want to go down as far down the spiral as I could.
And that's a very generous way of saying it.
Thank you.
Yourself.
Thank you. Thank you.
You've been very kind to yourself there.
Thank you. Thank you. So I got on Cryptopia. I was already a Monero fan. Naturally, I found the low cap Monero clone that was available on there, Sumo. And I've been shilling it pretty aggressively on this show. I established my feudal lordship over the sumo lands by buying a big bag, and I experienced my first like moonshot with sumo. Yeah. You will remember that day.
Well, that's the actual relevant piece of information here, which is right after you bought it.
Yeah,
it went up 10x.
And I had a very significant opportunity to sell it at 9x, 8x. Even be happy with a 5x stop loss. And because I had no idea what I was doing, I rode it all the way up, and I was like, well, if it's 10x now, wait till it gets to 100x. I saw big stars in my future. And so I held on to it, and I rode it all the way down, not quite to where I bought it, but like to below a 2x. And at that point, someone kept trying to hack my Cryptopia account, and so I sold it just because I didn't want to get hacked. And then I got into some deep FOMO. Like, remember when we did our alt season on the Campus Quad episode?
Yeah.
Like all the other alts, Sumo showed a little life, and so I bought it at like spring high.
What is spring high?
Like it wasn't the 10x high, but it was the high during the alt season happened. Very bad decision. Very bad decision.
Did it crash again? What happened? Just tell me what happened.
So what happened was, this is the first word I got about it. I'm sorry. This story's going to take a second just because it's very complicated. We had done a quick mention of Sumo that they were rebranding as RioCoin.
Yeah, and we decided it was a terrible idea. It was
a terrible idea and should have been a red flag that there was something. Like, I took it as a positive sign. I was like, oh, well, they're doing something. It's alive insofar as someone has redone the logo. Yeah. So once I get there, there's like all hell is breaking loose in the Sumo Coin Telegram channel. And people.
How many people are in the Sumo Coin Telegram channel?
I would say there's like 100 people, but there's like two people who are doing most of the talk.
Sure.
And the other people are just yelling at them. Like, how do I get my coins off the exchange?
Oh, okay. So it's like two people, admins. Two people are representatives of Sumo Coin.
Kind of. But it's like, it's hard to tell what's a real representative and what's a non-real representative. Yeah. All these people's names are like weird 90s like AOL handles,
sure,
to boot. So what the explanation that was being made in the Telegram channel was, they had discovered that the developers of Sumo Coin were not real people and were puppets that were all the accounts were being controlled. It was supposedly four Japanese people, which was actually one Vietnamese guy named Vu Quang, I believe.
Okay.
And the other people were either fictional characters or one of them's an actual Japanese academic who has no knowledge of Sumo Coin. So this guy had basically been, I don't think he was even developing Sumo Coin, supposedly. This is all allegedly. I have no idea what the truth is. He was basically outsourcing the development to who God knows who, saying that it was being done by four Japanese people who either didn't exist or did not have any knowledge of the project. And they brought in an outside developer.
Wait, but at what point did they decide to rebrand?
Okay, so I'm going to get to that. So they brought in an outside developer, this guy, FireIce UK, who I think has done some like open source Monero stack work. And this guy was behind the rebrand, wanted 30% of the pre-mined coins in exchange for doing a bunch of work on the code. And when he started working on the code, he discovered, this is in his accounting, that the 600,000 coins for 2018 that were supposed to go to developers had actually become 1 million coins, which is to say they were paying themselves. Not only were the four people one person, that person was paying themselves more than advertised. So there was a mutiny in the community. And they split into two factions. One wanting FireIce UK to take over the project. He had been part of the Rio rebrand.
Was there an actual what is the project to take over? This whole thing is a scam.
It's just a Monero clone. It's to keep working on this Monero clone.
Are people sure that the Monero clone exists?
It exists. It's Sumo Coin.
And what is it like? How do you have any faith that this is anything except like a completely bullshit ERC-20 token?
Well, it's not an ERC-20 token.
No, but that's my question. Like, how do you know it's anything? It's not just complete vaporware.
We don't.
Why are people asking?
So people were asking that in the Telegram channel. People were like, "Is it over? Should I like dump my coins, sell them?" And people were like, "This is the bottom. Basically, if we can recover from this, we can go to the moon." Like, people would not accept it.
And by people, you mean you.
Yeah, well, people were like, this could be a great buying opportunity, the revelation of this scam.
Oh, my God.
So now there's two factions that both claim to be Rio/Sumo Coin. It would have been simpler if these two factions had just chosen one of them to be Sumo Coin and one of them to be Ryo Coin. Instead, they both claim to represent both Sumo and Ryo Coin. It seems to me like after that, like a couple days after that trading stopped on Cryptopia and the price is frozen and people on the Telegram are like saying that you can't actually send transfers anymore. There's basically like both factions are trying to get people to use their, I'm going to mispronounce this word, daemon and wallet. And I don't understand exactly how that enforces a fork. But they're both basically trying to create proprietary wallet systems, which will define which one controls the project.
Okay.
Jay seems very interested in this topic.
No, okay, here's a question that I have for you. Which,
yeah.
Is that I don't understand in what world you did not assume that Sumo Coin was a scam that was not did not have real developers. It was all this guy named Vu who was pretending to be four Japanese people.
Okay, so in my opinion, looking back, I'm not sure that Vu is a scammer so much as like really incompetent.
He is pretending to be four Japanese people.
He had an explanation
to make
for that.
Sumo Coin. He is not Japanese in itself. It is at the very least cultural appropriation.
Well, to be fair, at least one of these fake Japanese people is named like Sumoshi Tanaka.
Yeah, but he's the one.
Which is totally like the name in like a video game.
Yeah, exactly.
Of the like Japanese.
It's like Pisidhata's brother.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the power hitter on the like Japanese baseball team.
That's right.
NES game.
World NES
Sumoshi
baseball.
Tanaka.
Baseball so, Stars 2000.
I didn't think that Sumoshi Tanaka was a real person. And obviously, I had not done enough research to see if there was any real people associated with. I didn't even really think that a clone coin needed much development since it's just more or less tailing on the wind behind Monero.
Yeah, I don't understand how this is not a scam though.
It's kind of a scam.
Yeah. What world are you saying that Vu is not a scammer? I think that when you look at these...
It was a long play scam is what I'm saying.
When you look at these coins on Cryptopia or these microcap places, no judgment. I owned a lot of these coins. I never owned Sumo, but that was just because I felt like that was your thing and I wanted you to have
Thank
your thing.
You. Thank you.
But I just assume they're all scams.
Yeah.
Like what evidence has there been that they're not all scams? Like I think that probably I even kind of think Litecoin was a scam.
That was what I was going to say. Is Sumo Coin more a scam than Litecoin, in your opinion? They're both clones of better-known projects.
Okay, well, Charlie Lee, as far as I can tell, never pretended to be four Japanese people.
That's true.
Okay, so in that way, he has a leg up. However, I would say that it's, and there are...
Although, ironically, Charlie Lee also sounds like a fake character who was, supposed to represent a developer.
Or like a character in like a fighting game from 1996.
Charlie Lee.
So Charlie Lee, I can say it because
Tiger Boom.
Tiger Boom.
It's like kind of an off-brand Mortal Kombat and Street Fighter 2 ripoff.
Tiger Boom. Charlie Lee with his Tiger Boom. I will say that Litecoin does have some differences, right? With Bitcoin, but not really that much to the point where it actually should matter in any sort of way. I think it's less of a scam, but we're talking about gradations of stuff.
Well, I think both of them are hey, wouldn't it be cool if there was another thing that was just like this, but it was cheaper and we could, use it for development or whatever. And it seems like a lot of what makes it a scam or not is the intention of the developer. So I'll agree with you that it seemed like Charlie Lee's intentions with Litecoin were more noble than Vu Quang's intentions with Sumo Coin. But anyone who is cloning a coin is in some ways just creating a bunch of cloned money and trying to get other people to think it's valuable, right?
Sure.
And so I guess we're saying if you're transparent about that, it's cool, but it's a scam if you're lying about it.
If you pretend to be four people, it's a scam.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So going on to scams.
Wait, I have one more thing to say, which is
no, please.
I sold most of my bag, but I still have some.
Okay.
So
you still have some.
It's not like this story is totally over.
You can put it next to Dark.
If you've been listening to the show purely for my Sumo updates, don't unsubscribe I still have my bag. Hold on to your bag. Oh, one other thing is I did try to get them to make me the new leader of SuboCoin.
And what did they say?
I could not get any traction in the Telegram room.
Yeah. Well, I would have supported that.
Do you think if I became the leader of Sumo, it would spike immediately?
No.
Based on my high profile?
No. They, I think some Ripple people who you are now the king of would maybe buy it. All right. Yeah. So moving on. Monster, this is another scam, I think. Do you remember, like, Monster cables?
I'm using some in this room.
Okay. I always assumed they were a scam because it's, like, the type of thing where you used to go to Best Buy and you would buy, like, a new TV or a new, like, DVD player or something like that. And the guy would be like, would you like the warranty? And you're like, no, I know that's a scam. And they're like, would you like some Monster cables and pay $115 for, like, the blue and red things that connect your TV? I always just assumed it was a scam. Like, why would it actually matter what the build quality of those cables are, you know? And they cost like 15 times more than the regular cables
that
you
get.
To be fair,
all of the cables at Best Buy are overpriced.
Yeah, but not like $115 for like a HDMI cord or whatever.
That's correct.
Like that.
That's correct.
And so Monster, I always thought was a scam. Yeah. However, Monster, in their spirit of is that right or wrong? I mean, you know much more about audio stuff than
well,
I do.
You know that Monster was were the people who were originally the developers of Beats headphones.
Yes, I do know that. But yeah. But
so they missed out on one moonshot.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they made enough money like buying like selling dumb cords with like little gold tips to like idiots at Best Buy. So I don't feel that bad for them. They are launching an ICO of $300 million.
Yeah.
And I have read through some of the description of it, and it seems to literally be a Disney Bucks project in which you can buy Monster. You can kind of just buy like Monster stuff with the Monster ICO.
I almost don't know when we have to stop covering these things because they're all so transparently pointless.
Like, yeah, okay, so but that is my question out of it, right? Yeah. Which is essentially like, what is there a point where the public is no longer snowed in by any of this? Is there a point where like this stops working? I mean, do you think that this is going to work at all? And like, what do you think the CMO or the CEO of these companies is thinking when they are doing something that is as transparently stupid and pointless as this, that is essentially like a one-time cash grab?
Well,
like,
it's not stupid if you get the $300.
No, but what are they thinking? Like something that is so is just a cash grab.
Well, here's what I think of it. Like, I think a lot of people don't really know where the ICO is going as a fundraising technique. So there's probably some business consultants out there who are like, look, you guys need to raise some money. This is how you would do it traditionally. You'd have to go do like a dog and pony show at all these banks and family investment offices, and the terms are going to be onerous and they're going to want a board seat. I don't really know that much about this world. And then they're like, or you can just issue some Disney bucks and get suckers to give it to you. And like, which one of those is preferable? Like, if you can easily raise money, you just raise money. We saw this with Telegram. If people just want to give you money, take the money. But if it's going to be hard to get the money and there's a bunch of people who would buy your token out there, it reminds me a little bit of the era of Uber, where Uber came in and like just started disobeying regulation.
Yeah.
And then everyone behind them who was starting startups were like, oh yeah, that's the growth hacker way. Just like, don't obey the rules. Start things that don't obey the rules. And it seems like for this kind of fundraising, an ICO is at best shakily legal as a way to raise money. And it seems like people are just like, hey, that's the future. Like a no rules raise.
What would incentivize anyone to buy the Monster ICO?
I mean, look, I bought Sumo Coin.
Yeah, but that was because things like Z Classic and other clone coins, privacy coins, were moonshotting, right?
Yeah, well, like, but like how well the Telegram sale did. I mean, it just sold out to a bunch of rich people.
But it's pretty adjacent to crypto in general, too.
I'm just saying name products have done well.
But those are crypto products. You know, Monster headphones or whatever it is now has absolutely no connection to crypto. It's just a random electronics company.
Yeah, it's a stretch.
And here's the other thing that I don't quite understand, which is like, you know, when you go to Target and you're in the aisle and there's like all these cards and you have no idea what the cards are for. So it's like a $15 gift card to Applebee's that you can buy. First of all, like, what the fuck is that?
I've stared at those for a while, too. Where it's like, also, like, some of these things, I'm like, you wouldn't give this as a gift, per se.
For example, $15 to Applebee's.
Yeah.
Like, they stock it, so obviously they feel like somebody might buy it at some point, but, like, is that, like, a money laundering technique? Like, I have no idea who would buy some of these cards.
Okay, so this brings up an interesting topic that I've wanted to talk to you about on this show. Okay. Have you ever checked out Perseo?
Yes.
Okay, so for people who are listening, Perseo is basically this service where you want something on Amazon, you list that you want it and what percent discount you're willing to buy it at in Bitcoin, and then you send in Bitcoin, someone buys it with their Amazon credit and sells it to you at 75, 80 cents on the dollar. And you paid in Bitcoin and they've paid in Amazon credit. They pocket the Bitcoin. This, I mean, and this is also not like some like dark website. This is like a iOS app that you can do this from. Is there any explanation for how this, why this exists other than money laundering?
I don't know. There might be like somebody might have like jacked a surplus of Amazon credit or
something. How could you get that much Amazon credit? Also, it's not like one person has all the Amazon credit. It's like lots of people like running lots of transactions.
I honestly have no idea. Of course, that's money laundering. I mean,
it's textbook money laundering.
Like, people saying like, well, the people want to consolidate Bitcoin, be like, they could just buy Bitcoin with the money that they spent on Amazon credit. That makes no sense.
I mean, store credit has always been a potent money laundering tool.
Because, like, I would understand it if there's a massive shortage of Bitcoin that you could buy, but there isn't. You know, you can buy it on Coinbase right now if you want.
No. Well, but what it is, okay, so the stuff is not used, it's new, it's shipped directly from Amazon to you. Works exactly like a normal Amazon transaction. There is not a shortage of Bitcoin, but there is a shortage of Bitcoin that's not attached to know your customer records. So if you do this transaction and send the person Bitcoin, there is no record of that Bitcoin purchase.
So it's
clean
laundered.
Bitcoin is what it is. Anyone can go buy Bitcoin for a buck over at Coinbase.
Oh.
This is like Anonymo Bitcoin.
Okay, so that's money laundering.
It's interesting. It's kind of cleaning the Bitcoin and coin scrambling it. Because it's like, where did that Bitcoin came from? Well, it came from a swap for Amazon credit.
Yeah.
I think this is a fascinating world, and I wouldn't be surprised if there was some revelation that like a quarter of the like Bitcoin transactions going on were like weird money laundering swaps like this.
Yeah, and toilet paper or like headphone like or like Apple chargers or something like that.
Well, the best thing to do is on a big ticket item where you can get a huge discount, right? Like if you go buy a computer for $2,000, you can get like 20% off by paying in Bitcoin.
You can do that.
Yeah. You can buy anything that's listed on Amazon.
Hmm. And it's totally legal.
That I cannot comment on.
Okay.
It totally works. I can guarantee that people I know have used it have gotten the products.
I actually don't remember. Oh, my point was, I actually thank you for that diversion because I did not know about that very well, but I had heard about it.
Jay has just ordered some stuff on Perseo.
My point was that, and this is the last thing I'll say about these ICOs that these companies that are doing. Yep. What is the difference between what they're offering and like the $15 Applebee's card that you get at Target, you know, that you don't get, but everyone has seen at Target and puzzled about being like, what the fuck is that? Like, there's no difference, right? Like, they're just essentially offering a Disney buck.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just don't get it. I don't understand how this is even like a, I don't understand other than to dupe really stupid people, how this is a fundraising technique for these companies.
So you don't get any ownership of the company? You just get like free money?
Yeah. You get like money to buy Monster stuff.
At a discount?
Unclear.
Also, like how much Monster stuff do you really need? Unless you're in the crypto cave, which is replete with 1,000 cords. I'm very interested in that whole the whole world of those prepaid cards and money cards, because I think that's in many ways the universe that crypto is creeping out of. And
I mean, not according to the Jack's Liberty vision.
Or the hole they're going to jump into.
Yeah.
But clearly there is some use for these cards that hold value at for specific stores, because you see those everywhere now.
I know, and I don't understand. I kind of get it for Amazon.
Yeah, it's a get. You give it to like your grandson.
But it's like they have it for Christmas. Like, I swear to God, they have it for stuff like Kmart and Walmart and Sears.
Even those make sense. Starbucks makes sense. What I don't get is when you see the super specific one for like a store that you chop at like once every 10 years.
Like Levi's or something like that. Yeah, yeah. Which I think I've seen that card too. And why do they sell them all at Target? Like, you know, who is going to buy a fuck? Like, can you imagine getting a like a present and it's like a $150 Levi's card and you're just like, what am I going to do with this? You know, like, why didn't you just give me $150? Like, it is a very bizarre thing. And you know what? I'm convinced right now from us talking about it that it's all money laundering. I feel like the Applebee's cards are money laundering cards.
I'm going to inject a new conspiracy into it, which is, so do you know what Green Dot cards are?
No.
Green Dot is the one that's for sale that's just like money, money. Like, you can swipe it like a debit card. So instead of it being like Kmart credit, it's you pay $50 and you get like, at an extreme, so you get like $42 on a debit card.
What?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Who would ever fucking do that?
People who don't have, well, like homeless people, like people who don't have like any.
But for what though? To buy like airline tickets?
Yeah,
or something
to do things
like
that you have to, well, things that you have to, you can only buy with like a swipeable card. But so Green Dot cards were really popular. They're also popular in prison.
Yeah.
They're like traded in prison. Like they're like literal stores of value.
Sure.
But I think they got investigated and a bunch of, I don't know if Green Dot itself, but Green Dot S cards have all gotten shut down because they're just obviously used for money laundering. So I wonder if the explosion in the Applebee's cards is to replace some of the vacuum for the Green Dot style cards that you can't do anymore. You're not really supposed to just issue a money card that's just anonymous, know your customer, untraceable money. I mean, Visa does do those prepaid debit
cards,
those are a link to your identity in
some
way.
Well, when did Green Dot cards end?
I don't think they're like totally over. They've just like gotten investigated a bunch of times and a bunch of them gotten shut down. I mean, here's a popular scam. I don't even have to surprise you with this one. You start up a Green Dot style company, sell a bunch of cards, turn off the network, none of them are worth money anymore.
Yeah, that's very efficient.
Very crypto. It's a very crypto move.
Yeah. You don't have to set up 4 fake Japanese aliases at all there. You just shut it off.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of the crypto scam ideas are just like updates on pre-crypto scams.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like weird gambling world scams.
One of my favorite, I'm sorry, as long as we're on like prepaid credit, one of my favorite long-form journalism story as ever is the story about a bunch of Irish travelers. You know, travelers, they're kind of like the gypsies of Ireland, but they're not actually ethnically gypsies. They came to America and ran this scam that netted over $1 million in Home Depot credit, where they would go to a Home Depot, buy up like 200 cheap sinks that almost looked exactly like really expensive sinks, and they had a barcode printer. And then they would go to a Home Depot in another state, return them all with the fancy sink barcode on them. So they'd spend like $10,000, get back like $200,000 in Home Depot credit. And then they would sell that to local contractors like 80 cents on the dollar, because contractors will always buy Home Depot credit. And contractors is another like money laundering, like cash based world.
Oh, they were selling their Home Depot credit wow.
So they would turn cash into sinks, the sinks into way more Home Depot credit, and then trade that back for cash.
How much money did they?
They netted over $1 million in 3 months.
Oh my God!
And they were amazing scam. They were caught by like this one like dogged Home Depot investigator.
Fuck that guy!
He was like, "I'll take him down."
Whoa, that's a great scam.
It's a great scam. And
but okay, here's my other question: how are they not caught very easily? Well, it seems like it'd be very easy to catch them. Where you're just like, okay, these guys bought this sink.
Sure.
These same guys brought these sinks back. let's just trace them.
Well, Home Depot is another place that has no know your customer policies. And this is partially because contracting is a shady, non-taxpaying work. So they would go and buy them with cash in one state, return them for credit in another state. And one of the big like Home Depot things is that you can always return anything without a receipt. So when the return would come in, no one would know where the sinks were from. And so there's no national network of Home Depots to be like, where do those sinks come from? And then they'd pop up three states over and pull the scam again.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they're pretty good. They're all living out of a van together.
Okay, so the thing that I'm more impressed with than these Irish roamers or whatever they're called,
travelers,
is how shady Home Depot is.
This is what I'm saying. Anything where there's like you've got these cash credit economies, there's always... Like money laundering is worth 20-30% of the money. So wherever you can like take money in and out of cash into Bitcoin, into Monero, any of those transforms are worth a 20-30% premium, which is like a lot of money in many of these cases.
Sure.
Hey, speaking of a lot of money, do you remember when Kik did that ICO last year?
Yes.
So Kik, which is a messaging app, some might say it's the poor cousin of Telegram, raised $100 million and in an ICO with their own token, which I believe is called confusingly Kin. I think Brady Dale actually talked about this.
Yeah, we had no idea why Kik and Kin were
Different. He talked about Kin for like 2 minutes before me and you were like, excuse me, what is the relationship between Kin and Kik?
Sure.
So the guy who's like the head of Kik was at some kind of a conference this week and was basically negging the blockchain. He was like, yeah, I don't know if it's really that useful for very much. Yeah. He was like, maybe for currencies, but doing anything else in the blockchain seems like a huge pain in the ass.
Fair.
I feel like that's like maybe what happens when you've like hit the open bar a little bit before you go on to the panel. Yeah. But it does bring up the like question of like, how many of these people who are raising money for previously non-blockchain ventures?
Do you mean like monster? Yeah, like monster cords?
Blockchain them. Like, do those people? Like, do all of those people actually believe in the blockchain and
working on the blockchain? So. Look, I mean, this is the same. Look, the theme of today's show seems to be like scams and whether or not we can take these things in good faith or not. And I would argue that over and over again that we should just assume bad faith.
Yep.
And it is a huge cash opportunity. I don't think that all the people are like, ha ha ha, I'm going to cash out and I'm going to end up in St. Kitts. But I do think that they say, well, this is legal right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, we do plan on being a huge company. And so the you know, is there a tiny bit of scamminess to what we're doing? Yes. But will the people eventually profit? Yes. You know, and I think that's probably the best case scenario for what people kind of think.
Yeah.
I don't think that people go in like with eyes completely blind and say, you know, this is the best way to raise money and we're doing this because, you know, like we think that the blockchain is great. It's the future. And we are I'm not talking about coin projects. I'm talking about like existing companies that are like just ICOing. Like, remember like one of the first shows we did, we talked about Kodak Coin.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. What the fuck happened to Kodak Coin? Guess what happened? Miner. It was a scam. You know, like it doesn't, I don't know if it exists or not exists, but even that at least had a use case. Remember? Cause it was going to be used to use the blockchain to do like photo rights or something like that. Like,
who
Yeah, I don't know. I just can't imagine that any of these companies are doing this in complete good faith.
Can I ask you a question? So we've talked about Sumo. We've talked about Monster. We talked about Kik. And none of them seem like they're in good faith. Does all of this bad faith crypto stuff make you believe in Bitcoin?
It has no effect.
Okay. I think ultimately for me, like seeing all these people try all these other things makes me go, wow, Bitcoin seems like a really good idea comparatively.
Well, for me, it has absolutely no effect because it seems like it's almost like something is happening with the same name, but is not the same thing. And it's happening like in another state or
apples
something
to
like
oranges.
That.
Huh? Apples to oranges in your opinion.
Yeah. That like it feels like it's similar things, but the people who are invested in Bitcoin, like they don't really care that Monster is doing some bullshit ICO, you know? And the people who, like, even the big money Wall Street investors who are investing in Bitcoin and real blockchain projects, like, if somebody is doing a bullshit thing, it's a little bit annoying, but I don't think that it changes anything. It's not like the people are, like, you know, interfacing with any of the real Bitcoin people at all.
So I was, like, caught up in the blockchain hype. And what a lot of people feel like they're saying when they speak honestly, like this guy from Kick, when he's like, I think blockchain is like a really effective way to issue a currency and it may not be that useful for much else.
Yeah.
Like the fact that people are trying other things and keep coming back to currencies and Bitcoin is the leading currency.
Yeah.
Does seem to like suggest that, you know, first time magic, they hit, the formula was hit upon. It wasn't just blockchain. It was this whole system that Satoshi hit upon, and no one has been able to come up with a better idea in the last 10 years, even knowing what Satoshi's idea was.
Yeah.
Like he came up with that idea in a vacuum, and you can't get a better idea even by copying him.
Yeah, that also sounds kind of bad for Bitcoin.
Okay, yeah, I can see. I see how you can like read. Yeah.
There's been no innovation since this random dude's white
paper. Read that
weather,
yeah. Both directions.
Okay.
Can we go back to making fun of Ripple on the show?
No.
Are we sponsored? No. Why, do you have like a sponsorship deal in the works or something?
No, but I do feel like, you know, it's better to have Ripple people as listeners.
I still want them to listen. We had a we had to give them the good cop bad cop.
Okay,
we rile them up.
Okay, I'll be good. We rile
them up, and then we insult them. Then we flatter them.
Okay.
Then we insult them.
I'll be
them.
The good cop. I'll be like, okay, so ask that question again.
Jay, am I allowed to make fun of Ripple anymore?
Oh man, you know we better not.
But Jay, it's centralized.
I understand that, but you know, the Ripple people, they listen too. It's like Michael Jordan said, Republicans buy sneakers too.
Are you is this like crunchy fried Jay? I don't even know what this voice
idea.
Is. It's like Midwestern Ripple fan.
Yeah.
All right. So we've given Ripple some shit. We had, we decided that when they gave us shit back and flooded our mentions, we should hear them out. We did a great interview with a Ripple fan.
That was very Trumpian, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Like, great interview by me.
Great interview. Great questions. Many people are saying it was great.
Yeah, exactly.
Jay didn't listen to it. Sad.
I did listen to it. Very charming British guy.
So, like, after we posted that, our mentions on Twitter are 100% about Ripple.
Yeah.
Like it's just like Ripple people like high-fiving each other,
yeah,
and tipping each other. Oh, shouts to all the Ripple tips we got. We both are now holding a lot of Ripple.
How much Ripple?
I think we got like
get?
20 or 30 Ripple.
Really? So
yeah,
how much
it's not a collective pot either. Me and you each tipped it individually and I got more tips than you.
Okay.
I'm just saying there's no like, we don't pool tips and then split them at the end of the shift in Ripple. We each take our own Ripple tips. We're agreed on that, right?
No.
You're going to have to bet me to get this Ripple off of my...
Okay. All right. I don't care about the Ripple tips. Okay. Okay, go ahead.
So, but like, I was shocked by like what a unified body these Ripple people are. They move as a group. They move as a tribe. Whether you think of it as like a beautiful, friendly tribe or an angry mob, they move in lockstep. And I think that probably has something to do with the fact that Ripple was put out, but like XRP was put out by the company Ripple. Like it has a more unified face. One of the things I like about Bitcoin is you can kind of project whatever worldview you have onto it. Like you could be a socialist who's into Bitcoin, or
I don't think you can.
He can't.
No, I don't think you can.
Why not?
Like, because the whole point of it is to destabilize like fiat currency and emergency spending, and so that you get cut down on things like entitlements and you know like welfare, for
that's,
example.
But that's the safe Amos version of
no,
Bitcoin,
but that's
maximalism.
Like also the white paper version of Bitcoin.
That's true. It's true.
So yeah. I don't know any socialist Bitcoiners except for like those dudes in at the New Inquiry or something like that, and they also think that Bitcoin is stupid. They just find it to be useful. You
yeah,
know? I don't know. Anyone.
Shouldn't those guys be standing for Monero really? Anyway, that's what they're mining.
I don't even know if they are still mining Monero, but I think for a while they were. I'll just also say, you know, regarding the Ripple thing,
yeah,
I don't know if it is necessarily because it's all centralization. I mean, two sides of the same coin, though. I think that part of it is because all of them buy into Ripple for the same exact reason.
You know? Yeah.
Like that, it's not that it's like one company and it's like one product and it's one ideology. It is literally like there's only one real reason to like Ripple. So if you're the type of person who likes coins for that reason, then like you're going to like Ripple. And then the people around you are going to be like-minded. And you're going to be like, wow, it's so pragmatic. You know, like I can imagine the world in which it's in. All arguments you and I had, you know, and talks that we had and points that we chalked up for Ripple, I don't know, like a year ago or something like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that's part of the reason why they move as a hive mind.
One of the things that really fascinated me about my experience in Ripple Land was you made the analogy to MLS fans, sure. Major League Soccer fans, which is, I would say, deeply insulting. And the Ripple people took it as a compliment.
What?
They were like, you know, that's kind of right on. Like, that is how we see ourselves. Because most people see... You know, most people are like, oh, like MLS is going to overtake the Premier League in a decade. Yeah, right. And it's a long shot dream, but like someone's got to believe in it in Seattle. You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think that's how the Ripple fans see themselves. I think sports is a really good way to understand tribalism and crypto. Mm-hmm. That I think people pick a team for whatever reason. These Ripple people pick it because of the way they feel about like bank transfers. Bitcoin people feel a certain way about like meat, eating all meat or whatever. Like you pick your team and then you just have to dig in your heels and like really fight for that team, which is interesting to me because this is not how people outside of crypto think of crypto. People think, oh, someone is into crypto or not into crypto. But within crypto, it seems almost impossible not to have a strong tribal
team-based
identity. Well, I was on Team Sumo, but we just got relegated like below the first division. So... you know, I'm on Team Monero, really.
You weren't really on Team Sumo. You were always on Team Privacy Coin.
Well, we're like, I would say we're like coin moderates, where we can like stomach a little diversity of coin.
No, but you were always, even from the very beginning, you were into Privacy Coins.
I was, yes. Yeah, yeah.
And I would say that your interest mostly lay in Privacy Coins.
Yeah, and you can see the same thing in Ripple. Like, there's a lot of people at Ripple. There's like some Stellar people in there, because Stellar is like the original founder of Ripple, is a Stellar person. So it's not like you can't have a second or third coin, but you have this strong like coin identity, and I think it must be really hard to shift those coin identities.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think about what my coin identity was. I don't know if I had one.
I mean, as soon as there's like skeptic, like fuck you guys, I'm going home coin, you can like, your coin identity is like exiting the market. I think your coin identity is fiat currency.
It's selling, panic selling my
U.S.
crypto.
Dollars. I believe your coin identity is Amazon stock.
Amazon stock, that's true.
But I do think that's like an interesting way to see this whole world. And like, remember, like when we were starting off, we were like, well, what is the psychology of these new buyers going to be? They're going to go from Bitcoin to Ethereum and Litecoin on Coinbase, eventually go to Bittrex. So what is the psychology of this tribal sports fan base?
Yeah, you know, that's actually an interesting thing, because like you and I, we haven't talked about that in a long time. And part of the reason is because you and I don't talk about the market anymore.
We should.
We don't talk about buying and selling as much anymore.
Yeah.
And I think that there's two reasons for that. The first is that we got bored of talking about the market.
Well, because we lost money.
Yeah. Yeah. But also because the market has been pretty flat.
It was fun to talk about while it was going up.
Yeah. And it was fun to talk about when it was crashing.
Yeah.
But it is not fun to talk about when it's just totally flat and it just kind of gets...
Well, there's no news. I have to like start off every episode and be like, Jay, Bitcoin still around 7,500 this week.
But like so the one thing that we do know is that there was a flood of people who came in November and December.
Thanksgiving babies.
They exhibit a pattern behavior that was very easily trackable for anybody who was in crypto for longer than them.
Yep.
Some of those people are still around, right? Some of those people are still interested in crypto. And I feel like I have no idea what they're doing. You know, like, are they just sitting on coins and waiting for the next bull run? That's kind of what I'm doing. You know, I have like a small amount of coin and some fiat, and I'm just waiting for things to shake out. or have they sort of joined some of these tribes, you know, and are have they found, as they do research, as they get more and more into it, I think we can charitably say that a lot of these people are probably very smart, you know?
Yeah.
And that they find something that they believe in and that they just sort of become part of those next tribes.
Well, one thing I've always wondered is, can you buy, like, would you, if you bought Ripple at $3 and like really believed in it and now it's at 60 cents, would you stay in that tribe?
No, but I don't think that the people who are Ripple stands did that. Cause like the amount of time where Ripple was at $3 is very short lived. Yep. And the amount of time that it was went from like, you know, 8 cents to 20 cents was very, very long lived, you know? And yep. So, I mean, you and I both could have bought Ripple at like 20 fucking cents, you know? Like,
yeah.
I think we both did buy Ripple at 20
cents.
I
think if we had bought Ripple at 20 cents, we would have still been wrecked to Bitcoin though. Like Bitcoin has gone up more than Ripple in that
space. It went up 10x?
No, it's only at like Ripple's at like 60 cents now, dude.
No. I'm talking about like the spike to $3.
Oh yeah, if we had sold the top. Yeah. You can see what my track record is on selling double digit multiples high. So
yeah, I sold 0.
My fantasy scenarios, I assume that I ride it all the way up and all the way down. I'm just like, it would have been thrilling to break even after a wild roller coaster.
That is true. Yeah, it is. That actually did happen where you could not conceive of a world in which you sold the top.
Yeah. So I don't even think about selling tops anymore. But I do think that like crypto generations are real.
Yeah.
And I think that first waivers are more fanatical and more tribe than second waivers. So I think Bitcoin has actually been moderated by its own popularity.
Yeah, but now it's like on its 15th wave.
It's like each wave, like the Bitcoin Cash fork like washed out a few crazies.
Yeah.
Like few people became like eth maximalists at that when eth came out, and the people who are left over are being diluted by new people who are more reasonable than them and less knowledgeable than them.
Yeah.
And I guess what I'm asking is, starting from that tribal standpoint and then moving towards a more like moderate worldview, like where does that psychology lead you as an investor?
Well, I'm not really a crypto investor.
Well, I'm not really a journalist, but we both pretend to be.
Okay. All right. I went for that. I think that it makes me less excited about the market.
Okay.
Because I want irrationality, right? Like, I want massive spikes.
Right.
I want this market to behave in ways that the stock market does not, you know? Otherwise, if it is just about reasonable gains over time,
yep,
there are a lot more stable things and a lot less shady things to invest in, you know, that have clearer tax codes and which don't require you to like worry every single time that you know, the whole thing is gone.
Is that a little bit the poker player in you also, where you're like, if people aren't going to be betting crazy at this table, everyone's going to like play pretty conservatively well, like, let me find another table.
Yeah. Yeah, because what is the point of investing in crypto if it's not spiking wildly, or if there's no potential for it to spike wildly, you know? Like, is it to use it? No. No one would argue that it's to use it. Even, like, Safedin Amos would be like, no, you should get it as a store of value. But, like, if there is no reason right now to buy it as a store of value, you might as well not buy it as a store of value, because you can assume that later on you might be able to buy more, you know?
Yeah.
And that's sort of where I am right now with it, where it's just like, I don't see a psychological reason why in the next few months it will spike. That doesn't mean I don't think it will ever spike, or it won't spike maybe even this year. But I have a hard time figuring out what's going to cause it to like jump. Like the fact that it is stable, the fact that it is behaving a lot more like a reasonable thing right now.
Yeah.
Does sort of bring more credence to the idea that a lot of the things that were happening with price spiking over the past, you know, 6 months, 7 months were due to price, like mass market manipulation.
Yeah, you really want that to be true.
The DOJ is investigating.
You and the DOJ just won't let go of this idea.
Yeah.
No, I think that's right. I mean, People have been like, Bitcoin won't have arrived till it's stable for a long time. But I don't think that many people have actually thought through what a like stable Bitcoin world is.
I agree. That's true.
And
they're like just saying some words there.
Yeah.
But they happen to also be right, I think.
Yeah.
But like the reality is that like stable Bitcoin means that we're between like $6,000 and $8,000 for maybe like 9 months.
Yes.
And that's not a bad thing, I don't think.
One of the things that I think Marty Bent tweeted this about how as societies like Venezuela, economy crash, people convert their money into Bitcoin, the whole idea of central planning becomes pointless if people aren't using your currency. Like you can't centrally plan Bitcoin. If enough people in those markets start pushing into them and we have Zimbabwe, Venezuela or whatever, there almost becomes a shadow world economy that's the linked economy of Venezuela, Zimbabwe, and these places where people are holding a lot of their wealth in Bitcoin. And in that case, I think stability is better. And in some ways, like I know we've been worried about this world where like these feudal overlords hold 10% of the world's wealth in a bunker. A stable Bitcoin and a flow from crashing currencies into Bitcoin is a different like narrative outcome that could occur. Now, I don't know if people in those countries have enough money to actually get much of the Bitcoin that instead is going to go to Peter Thiel, but it's an interesting way to like scenario to play.
Yeah, out. Yeah, for sure. And maybe Peter Thiel actually wants that to happen and maybe he doesn't consult because you know, it just means that if he doesn't steal all the Bitcoin, then his Bitcoin is worth more.
Well, the best hedge against like Bitcoin tyranny is to spread the Bitcoin out and have small individual investors invested in Bitcoin. So everyone do your part, buy a little Bitcoin. That includes you, Jay.
Yeah, I do have a but I think you're right at some point is that it is they have to understand that too much consolidation will lead to a drop in adoption.
Yes.
And that there's an optimized place where they can be like extremely wealthy and still have the thing work.
Right.
And have a bunch of worthless Bitcoin.
I mean, it doesn't really matter what the price of Bitcoin is. If you're in Venezuela and you're trying to get out of the Bolivar, you're going to buy it. So I still think it's no matter what the price of Bitcoin, these kind of economic shifts are there. But I think that, you know, not the first or second, but the 15th country that has hyperinflation and goes to Bitcoin, that starts to become the actual market for Bitcoin. Like, I don't know how much of the world right now is that.
Or if those two countries do a lot of business between one another.
Right.
Yeah. And that, like, and that they, this is a affinity point between two countries that might not have any sort of affinity point before. Then it opens up a new pathway for world economy stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it'll be interesting to see if countries really go Bitcoin. Will they have Bitcoin trade agreements? Like you could see Central America going Bitcoin and then having open Bitcoin borders, sort of in the same way that the euro functioned.
Sure.
And the euro is falling apart right now while this is happening. I think actually, like, if there's one thing that's been like a positive story for Bitcoin this week, it was the collapse of the Italian bond market in relation to the politics that are happening there. If truly the euro were to split apart, I mean, the euro is the closest to a utopian cross-border currency that we've come up with.
Yep.
Exciting times to live in.
Yeah.
So you're not buying, though?
No.
What would make you buy?
I don't know. I mean,
really good news.
I think that two things would make me buy. The first would be that it's some sort of sustained upward motion and spike in interest in Bitcoin. But if it dropped to 3,000, I would insta buy.
Yeah,
like I don't care what the news is. It could be like Bitcoin is like, you know, it's like all every somebody come out with like an article that said that every single Bitcoin ever used was done for murder or drugs, you know, and then I would think about it, you know, but any reasonable amount of news that came out that dropped it to 3,000, I would just insta buy at 3,000.
I think I know what's going to get you back into Bitcoin.
What?
Perseo purchasing.
Like buy a bunch of dumb rugs.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Like sound equipment.
Yeah. Exactly.
Camera lenses. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, we'll be back next week.
Thanks, Aaron.
That was Coin Talk. I edited it this week myself. Could you tell? We're brought to you in partnership with Medium. You can find all of our episodes at medium.com/cointalk. We love recommendations for guests. We really do. Send them to me, hi@cointalk.show. Also would love to hear from some sponsors. We're getting a few of those in the works, and generally time to take this show big time. So see you next week.